Alright guys, thanks for tuning in. This is the first podcast in what will be a series of talks about trans-related topics. Today what I want to talk about as an intro is a little bit about myself, a little bit about my transition, and a little bit about coming out and what that means. So I'm Frankie, I'm 23. I started taking testosterone in January 8th, 2018 to be exact. So as of right now, today is March 22nd. So I'm just like a week or so shy of 3 months. So for a lot of people who know me, this is going to be new news. I haven't told very many people that I have started taking hormones, even though it's already been 2.5 months. And I think the reason for that is obviously because it's a touchy subject. Not a lot of people really understand. Not a lot of people really have genuine knowledge about it. And there's just a lot of ignorance surrounding the idea of transitioning, someone who is transgender, and everything that that entails. So I have kind of been dragging coming out. I've been dragging bringing this up to people. I've been struggling with how I'm going to go about doing that, and what to say. Who do I tell? How do I tell them? How are they going to react? My mind is considering everything. My mind is telling me that a lot is at stake. And it's interesting that I care so much about quote unquote everything that's at stake, because part of me really doesn't care. Part of me really doesn't care what other people think. Like I said, I'm 23, and this is something that I have known for my entire life. Literally since I was 5 years old. All throughout my childhood, I would tell my mom, I would tell my parents, I want to be a boy, I want to be a boy. And when you're that young, a lot of people really have a hard time believing that a child that young could know that they're trans at that age. And I almost find it even more compelling and even more legitimate that a child of that age does know, because they're so young, they can't have any outside influence. You know, they barely have an understanding of words, of terms, of, you know, the term transgender. I didn't learn that till I was maybe 10 or 11. It definitely wasn't something that I knew at 5 years old. But the point is, what makes it so monumental is that in my soul, in my young soul, in my mind, I knew then that I didn't feel that I was in the correct body. I didn't feel that I truly aligned with the body that I was living in. And that was from no outside opinion. That was from no outside, you know, source or influence. There's just something I knew. So for people that discount the possibility that a young child could know, I think when you really look at it objectively, it's harder to discount, because there is way less room for outside influence. So what that child is telling you is coming directly from them. It's coming from their being. It's coming from their soul. So the point is, I'm 23 now, and this is something that I've known all my life. And the reason 50% of me doesn't care what other people think is because I've spent the last 20 plus years caring what other people think. I mean, before coming out as trans, I identified as gay. And that was hard. I really took a long time even to come out and do that, because I was giving so much consideration to everyone else around me and how they would take it, how it would affect them, you know, what would they think, that I lost sight of even thinking about how I felt and my feelings and everything that was important to me and my own life. And I really didn't get to a point where I realized that that was backwards until I was maybe 18, 17, And it was at that point that I was like, screw it, like, this is who I am, and whoever doesn't like that doesn't have to stay in my life. And what's more important, no matter who doesn't like that, that doesn't reflect me. That doesn't have to make me feel that I've done something wrong or somehow I'm flawed just because someone else might have a problem with it. I like to think of the fact that no matter what, I mean, this doesn't even have to be related to a trans issue or an LGBTQ issue. No matter who you are, no matter how you identify, people are always going to have something to say about you. They're always going to have an opinion about you and your character. And no matter how hard you try, you just can't please everybody. You'll never be able to please everybody. So there has to be some point where you recognize, I have to live my life for me. And it's so odd because it seems like the easiest thing in the world. And for some people it is. For some people, they never experience this existential crisis of, do I live my life for me and the way I want to live my life, or do I live it for other people? Do I do things to please other people or just to appease other people so they're content? And for the people that doesn't come easy to, for the people that really struggle with living their own life for themselves or trying to just please and make everybody else content, that's a struggle. And that has a lot of implications to it. And I consider myself the latter individual. I really struggled with having the confidence to live my own life for myself, like completely, totally for me. And even now, at my age, I'm still struggling with that. And that's why I haven't come out to everybody. And that's why that 50% of me still is even debating and kind of mulling over this, because it's such an area of contention for my soul, for me internally. So, you know, I get to a point every day where I get closer and closer, and I've actually told a couple people now. Obviously, my girlfriend knows, my family knows, and at this point in time, there's maybe like 5 people that I'm friends with that know. And like 3 of those people I'm not really even that close with, so it's like, it's easier to tell people like that, you know? And I did that for a reason, just to give myself practice with coming out, just to give myself, you know, this trial run of telling people and seeing how they're gonna react to it and seeing how they take it. And honestly, the people that I have told, it has gone really well, and part of me kind of felt that it would, at least I hope that it would, because I presented, you know, tomboy or boyish my entire life. Like, when I was in middle school, of course, there was a period of time where I really wanted to fit in, and just be like all the other girls, because I kind of reached this existential crisis. I mean, I was literally going through an existential crisis every day for my entire life. Just dealing with this mentally, dealing with feeling like the internal me doesn't match, doesn't identify, doesn't connect with the external me. That's what being trans is. It's this very, very severe, persistent, perpetual disconnect between the internal and the external you. It's almost as if you're just piloting a shell. You're walking around in this shell that outwardly people see as one way, and they can't even conceive that the internal of that same person doesn't identify with the external. And people really have a hard time grasping this, and I think that it's because the representation of transgender individuals is something that's so far away. You know, figuratively, it's something that, okay, Caitlyn Jenner, like, celebrities go through, people that don't have any close relation to you. So when you're not closely, you know, with these people, when you don't closely relate to these people, it's easier for you to rely on stereotypes and things that you've been enculturated into learning throughout your whole life. And that's why there's such a negative stigma around trans people, because the idea is like they're what, they're freaks, or they're, how could anybody want to change their sex. Like, what's that all about? You know, we're crazy, or however people see us. And it's just mass ignorance. And that's where it's stemming from. And I believe that, you know, it's unfortunate, but, and it's unfortunate because it's hard. These things are just hard to talk about. It's very personal. To go on the internet, to go wherever and talk about your own experience and like the demons that you have lived with and the struggles, like the personal struggles, the psychological struggles, the physical struggles that we go through because we have this such psychological dissonance, this cognitive dissonance, this war in layman's terms, you know, going on in our mind and our soul and with our body. I mean, every day, it's hard to talk about, but it needs to be talked about because people aren't going to let go of that ignorance until they're educated. So at least my whole point with trying to facilitate a platform for that is to educate people. It's to get people to a place where maybe if they're given more of the tools to understand, then they can actively coordinate their life, structure their life differently, in a better way, just to move to a way that's more inclusive, more accepting of people who go through this, people who are trans, people who change their gender. And the idea, of course, is, yeah, just to have a more well-rounded knowledge of this topic so we don't have this mass hate that we have. But anyway, so for myself anyway, as I've said, this is something I've struggled with for a long time. But with coming out, like I said, part of me was kind of expecting the majority of the people that I told to be okay with it. And the reason was because it wasn't as though, you know, I dressed super girly and acted super girly and all of these quintessential girl things. Like, I did all of these things growing up. I mean, I was stereotypically masculine. I always wore male clothes. I played, all my best friends were guys. I did male activities, you know. I like to play with frogs and bugs and like reptiles and just do stuff outside and get dirty and explore and just things that girls really weren't, you know, known for doing. Girls didn't do those things, and I acted that way. I mean, my character, my mannerisms, everything. It was always more masculine, always more tomboy. And when I went through stages in my life in, you know, 8th grade and middle school, when I'm trying to fit in, because at that point, I've lived with knowing that I was different for so long, and for not being able to tell anybody, for not really even having a word for it, because again, I didn't know what trans was at a very young age. I just knew I felt that I was a boy. I felt I was male. I felt, more importantly, that I was in the wrong body, that I didn't identify with the body I was in. And when you struggle with that for so long in those formative years, it really shapes a lot of you, and it breeds a lot of negative psychological experience. I struggle with depression. I struggle extensively with anxiety. That's like the most perpetual thing in my life. And it's gotten worse as I've aged, and it's just because there's a lot of other real world factors that affect it, like transitioning and the psychological stressors that come with that, just the weight that comes with that. And that weight is from the weight of the world, the weight of everybody around you not understanding something that you're going through, something that has such a taboo stamped on it, and people really get offended. They really don't accept something like this. And sure, it's becoming maybe more widely accepted, but that doesn't mean that it's global, and doesn't even mean that it's local. So it's like not everybody is aware that this is a thing, you know, even now, even in 2019. But anyway, the reason I didn't think people were going to be, you know, too surprised was because I already present like a guy. I mean, so many people, I got misgendered so much when I cut my hair, even pre-T. And I cut my hair about 2 years ago. It was when I met my current girlfriend. I had just turned 21, and the cutting of my hair had been something that I wanted to do for years, because it was like the only way I felt I could exercise some sort of control over my body that could help me at least look or relate to or feel more like my inner self. You know, if I cut my hair, usually for women, the length of your hair is really, really a sign of your femininity. It's directly correlated to you being female. You know, women are very protective over their hair. Their hair is a big part of their identity. My hair wasn't. For me, it felt like my hair was something I used to hide behind. It was like this cape or like this towel I could wear over my head, this security blanket that just made me feel somewhat more comfortable in my skin because I could hide. I felt like I could had this cloak around me. You know, I can't explain it, but I wanted to cut that for the longest time. I wanted my hair cut in middle or high school, and I always was like, oh my god, I could never do that because what would everybody think? What would I look like? You know, I have very very pretty severe body just dysmorphic issues, and just I have really low self-esteem with my body. I'm really hard on myself, and I nitpick every area of my physique. And again, that's also stems from being trans, from just hating everything about your body, because it doesn't look right, doesn't feel right, it isn't right. So anyway, I always had thought, you know, I could never cut my hair, I would look, you know, horrible, and, you know, more importantly, what would everyone else think? And I'll never forget, I was with my mom one time, and we were on the beach, I think in Lake Geneva, which is up by Wisconsin, and I had remembered, I wanted to tell her that I wanted to cut my hair, and we were laying out, and I had pulled up a picture of someone very feminine. I think it was the woman who was in The Great Gatsby, and she played the girl. I'm totally blanking on her name, and I actually love that movie. But she played Leonardo DiCaprio's, you know, woman of interest, Daisy, geez. And she had a pixie cut, and obviously very feminine and whatever. So I thought that would lessen the blow if I show my mom this very feminine haircut to start with. Even though that wasn't what I wanted. I wanted the manliest boyish looking haircut I could get. But I thought that maybe that would help segue into it if she thought that, okay, well, it would look kind of like this, and then I'd eventually get it and it wouldn't. But I showed her that picture and I was like, hey, you know, mom, what would you think if I cut my hair like this? And she kind of looked at the picture and paused, sighed, and she looked at me and she said, you're not gay, are you? And in that moment, I just froze, and I you know, closed my phone, and I was like, no, of course not. And the point is, you know, I had been socialized, I had learned very early, just by very small cues like this from my mom, from other people, that cutting my hair, being gay, being trans, those things just weren't appropriate. Those things just couldn't be. They weren't allowed. So it was really, really hard for me. Again, these are reasons why it was really hard for me to live my life for myself. And when I finally did cut my hair, which was at age 21, which was two decades of me wanting this and wanting this and wanting this, and it finally just got to a point where I was like, I have to do this. It was like a breaking point. I'm like, I'm cutting my damn hair because I want to live my own life. This is how I want to look. I'm getting older, you know, every day isn't guaranteed. And not to sound morbid or anything, I consider myself a realist, with very pessimistic undertones. You know, I look at things for how they are. I don't look at things and sugarcoat them, and I'm not naive to the reality of things. And it was like, you know, I don't want to die tomorrow and not have cut my hair. You know, this was the first step. And I still thought about this with being trans and transitioning. You know, it was more like, I don't want to get to my 23rd birthday and not have started this process. But I'll get to that. But that was where my mind was. You know, I'm thinking, if I die would I be regretful that I didn't go through with some of these things? And I could say 100%, if I died tomorrow, I would have been regretful for not cutting my hair my whole life. And I cut my hair. I had my friend do it. She had just got out of beauty school. I said, it was literally like the 31st, it was Halloween. And I was like, I want you to cut my hair. And I mean, as much as I wanted it my whole life, when she cut it, I was like, I went through like a mini crisis because, you know, you live 21 years with your hair and no one teaches you how to live without it or what it feels like right after to be without it. So I felt naked. I felt exposed. I felt like I didn't have anywhere to hide anymore. And I think that was what was so scary, was that I felt like people can see me for who I am. And it was like, because I had spent so much of my life already hiding that, trying to hide that, I was really nervous because I had nowhere to hide anymore. People were really going to see me for me, and I wasn't sure how they were going to take it. And it was scary. But, you know, fast forwarding till now, and every day since then, I have not regretted cutting my hair at all. Not once, not even for a millisecond, because that gave me a level of confidence that I had not had before, ever. And I don't think that I could be where I am right now without having cut my hair and then having that confidence level. And then being able to then, okay, now I can build off that and do this. Like, the confidence, it builds. You know, once you succeed in doing one thing, you know, you find that drive, you find that confidence because you got it, you know, and you haven't had it. And now you're able to move to new heights. You're able to succeed and to go about pursuing new things and achieving new things. And that's the whole reason I think I'm able to even be here right now. You know, to say, hey, I'm 2.5 months on testosterone. I mean, it's crazy listening to myself talk, and I can feel and I can hear my own voice deepening. I can hear that it's different. It's amazing. The changes that I am experiencing are making me feel every single day closer and closer to my internal self, to the real me inside. The outside is finally going to be matching with the inside, and it feels amazing. I mean, I can't even explain it. So, before I get off into too much of an alternate tangent, I think I'm gonna cut this one, and gonna save some more information and some more for the next podcast. So, thank you guys so much for listening. If you like this, let me know. Heart it, like it. I have to be honest, I haven't really checked out all of the logistics and the analytics, so I'm not really sure how people can go about sharing this or whatever. But if you liked it, tune in next time. What's up, you guys? Thank you for tuning in. In today's episode, I want to talk about dysphoria. So, we'll just get right into it. What is dysphoria? Dysphoria is something that is quite specific to transgender individuals. I suppose it could extend to other non-binary folks, other people who identify as anything on the spectrum, meaning anything under LGBTQ, etc. But in my opinion, I want to bite the bullet and say that really dysphoria is pretty specifically acute to trans people. Now, it's sort of an abstract concept on the face of it. There really aren't enough descriptive words I could string together to adequately represent what dysphoria means and just how monumental and extensive it really is for the person experiencing it. But if I was going to try to put a definition to it, from my own personal feelings, my own personal experience, I would equate it to this severe, perpetual, extensive feeling, mentally and physically, of just hating very specific parts of your body. The whole concept of being trans, as we've talked about, is feeling this disconnect between your internal and external self. Dysphoria accompanies that, because if you don't feel that you and your two selves are one, a lot of cognitive dissonance can occur, and a lot of psychological stress is then a byproduct, because you internalize it by hating your body. It's like if you're living in a shell that isn't really yours, you start to literally loathe and hate that shell, every part of it, because it doesn't truly reflect who you really are. It's like not only is it piloting the shell that's not yours, but like the shell that's not yours is decorated in like everything that you hate. It's got your least favorite color. It's got everything horrible that you hate about everything, just all put onto it. So it's hard, and that has real world implications. That has psychological implications. So now dysphoria can be experienced in different ways. It can be experienced in different places. Some trans individuals have dysphoria everywhere, and that means they have dysphoria about their chest if you were female at birth. A lot of people have dysphoria about their genitals, depending on whatever that is. Some people have it in one area, some people lack it in another. Some people have it in areas that other people don't, and that's totally fine. There's no prereq that you have to have it in a certain spot to make you trans. You can experience dysphoria with any part of your body. So I'll get personal to help illustrate what dysphoria is. I experienced dysphoria with my chest significantly. My hips would be a second place, but really my chest, and my face as well. I kind of have like a baby face. I have a jawline that's rather chiseled, I'll say, but I think I have a baby face, and that's an area of contention. But my chest is really my main area, really that's the place where I experience it the most. I don't identify with my breasts whatsoever. As best as I can articulate this, they have always felt to me as these two foreign just skin bags. These two foreign masses that are just glued to my chest, and I have no control over them. I have no say in the fact that they exist there. And I really greatly go to great lengths to disguise my chest, to hide it, to make it seem, to my mind at least, that it's not there. And for many trans people, it's called binding. And if you've never heard of this concept before, it's really just the concept of wearing something very, very tight to compress the chest as much as humanly possible, so it looks as flat as possible, so it reflects a male cisgendered chest. And there are various devices that allow one to do this. There are physical binders, which are just like a very, very, very tight compression vest jacket thing, that is either sports bra shape, or it can be kind of like a tank top, so it compresses everything, the whole body, the hips, everything. There are very specific tapes that can be used. People bind unsafely, by the way, with ace bandages, where they'll just wrap it around their torso as tight as possible to give this appearance of a flat chest. So people really go to very great lengths to remedy and hide the areas that they're very dysphoric about, and sometimes in very unhealthy ways. And it's unfortunate, because that just goes to show that the dysphoria, the psychological distress associated with those specific body parts, causes those individuals to literally do anything that they have to make the appearance to themselves and to others seem less. So my way of remedying this for myself was sports bras. Why would I wear a normal bra? Of course, I don't want to draw attention to my chest. A sports bra compresses that. I had bought a binder once. I don't really bind, but even actually, now that I'm like a couple months on T, I've considered buying a binder, just because the more I start to pass, the more my chest will kind of give me away, especially when I'm at the gym, because I like to roll my sleeves and just have my upper body showing in a way that sometimes my chest will show. At least the curvature of my chest will show. But for me, I don't have a big chest, really. It's definitely not small, but it's not huge. Probably like a B or C. That's literally as much as I'm ever going to get personal about my chest ever again. Because I don't like to talk about it. It doesn't feel like it's a part of me. Like, that's the whole point. Like, you experience dysphoria very specifically about certain body parts of you that really just, that you just loathe because they aren't you. They don't reflect you adequately. And there's surgeries that people can undergo to remove these things. And 100% I plan to. It's called top surgery. And it's literally like, it's a mastectomy. They remove the breasts and you're left with a male chest. And through the use of hormones, through the testosterone and the muscle that you would build ideally, and even if you don't build muscle, it's not a big deal, but it literally gives you a male chest. And that's what people want. That's what I want ideally, because this is my biggest area of dysphoria. So dysphoria is a major component for transgender people, and it's very hard to categorize. It's hard to put into words because it's a feeling, first and foremost. Dysphoria isn't like, it's not a term. It's not an empty term that just simply has a definition and you can use it in a sentence. It's a feeling, it's a state of being. And that's why it's so hard to pinpoint, that's why it's so hard to talk about, and that's why it's so hard for people to understand it, because it really isn't something that you can adequately grasp unless you've experienced it. And go figure, a lot of the things that are specific to being trans are hard to explain for that exact reason. Because people who aren't trans simply can't understand. They can hear and they can maybe grasp to some extent, but is true, genuine understanding ever plausible? I don't know. I don't think so. And that's really why it makes it hard for people who are ignorant about being transgender to understand someone who's transgender, because they just can't wrap their mind around what that would feel like. It's foreign to them. But nevertheless, the people who do experience dysphoria, it's very real. It's very pervasive, perpetual, and it's difficult to deal with. It is the factor that leads people to take their life. It leads people to harm themselves indirectly. Maybe it's just by binding too tightly, and this constricts the chest, and it has a multitude of implications when it comes to injury. It's things like that. So dysphoria is something that should be understood as very serious, very real, and very emotional. It's very significant in the life of a transgender person. And one of the main ways that we alleviate dysphoria is by taking hormones, is by going on hormone replacement therapy. Or for some transgender individuals who don't want to go on hormone therapy and they just have top surgery, or maybe it's bottom surgery if that is the area you experience your dysphoria. Whatever you do, the reasons people take the routes that they do is because we ultimately want to eliminate the dysphoria. And the dysphoria goes away by taking the hormones, having the surgeries, because those things bring us closer, at least one step closer, to feeling and identifying with our internal self. It brings our external to start looking, mirroring the way the internal body feels, the way the internal self feels. And that's the importance of it. If you guys want to talk about your dysphoria, I was going to say, tell me where you experienced dysphoria, but I realize that it's not always something that's easy to talk about, and a lot of guys don't want to talk about the areas that they feel dysphoric, but it's something that we all experience, so it's not something that you should keep to yourself. Talk to people, talk to a therapist if you see a therapist, go online, network with other trans guys, trans women, and conversate, talk, because everything that you're going through, someone else has also gone through or is going through, and you can foster relationships, you can foster this sense of belonging and peace just by talking to other people who have gone through the same thing that you have gone through. So that's my word of advice for today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Have a great day. What's up, guys? Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to episode 3. Hope you're having a great day. It's Friday and it's about 4 o'clock. And today has been pretty lax for me. It's been a good Friday. I had one class in the morning, and then my girlfriend and I went out for breakfast. And she's at work right now, and I've just been recording new things for the podcast pretty much since she left. And the sun is shining, blue skies, birds are chirping, it's 40 degrees. It's a nice day, so I hope you guys are enjoying your day as well. And again, thanks for tuning in. So today I want to talk about doubt versus nerves. You might be thinking, how does this relate to anything trans related? And the answer is, well, it does. And the better answer is, this also applies to any and everything that isn't trans related. So I believe that you can take this and apply it to any aspect of your life where you're coming up on a decision, you're faced with a decision, and although it's something that you've really, really wanted your whole life, now that it's staring you in the face and you're experiencing nervousness, which is a very normal physiological reaction to something new, to something different. But because of these nerves, now you're feeling doubt. And now you're gonna make the mistake of conflating doubt and nerves. So let me give you an example of this. I was on Instagram and someone I follow had posted some type of Q&A where people were just encouraged to send him questions and he would answer the questions. And one of the questions that I saw someone ask was something along the lines of, I've known that I was trans for years, I've known that I wanted to go on T, but I'm just not super confident if it's the right thing for me. I'm nervous to make the decision, I feel like I can't commit to it. Because I'm nervous, I don't know if it's for me. How did you combat that? And then the user, you know, answered. And that question kind of stood out to me specifically because that was something that I experienced myself. With starting testosterone. And let me tell you, starting T was something that I knew I wanted all my life. It wasn't something that I ever doubted was the right thing for me. I definitely took some time to almost do some really concrete soul searching, if you will, because there are a lot of transgender individuals that don't take the route of hormones. And as I expressed in my last video, my big area of dysphoria is my chest. So for a while, I thought that maybe if I just got top surgery, I would be content. Like, that would be enough for me. And I wouldn't have to do hormones. Like, I could just live my life and be okay with myself because my biggest area about myself that I hated would be gone. It'd be taken care of. And I realized that that wouldn't work for me, because at the end of the day, I had also seen results of non-binary folk who had gotten top surgery, who weren't on hormones, and those results just weren't results that I would be okay with if it were me. And there was nothing wrong with their results. Everything, like, it looked fine, it looked great. But for my own personal psyche, for me, I knew that I wouldn't be okay with that because I wanted more. I wanted, ultimately, a male physique. I wanted a very muscular male chest. I wanted a muscular male body. I wanted that specific structure, the specific stature. And that could only be achieved by hormones. So I knew hormones were the thing for me, and there was never any really doubt in my mind. And once I came to that realization about, you know, could I do top surgery without hormones? The answer is no. Okay. That almost solidified it even more for me. But what surprised me was when I got closer to being able to finally take hormones, like, after I had gone through my therapist visits, I saw the social worker at the clinic, and she really, you know, signed my letter to start T. And it was like, after all of these things were finally coming together, and I had a date set where I was going to go to the doctor and have them administer the first shot, you know, pick up the prescription, everything. It was like, as soon as it became a reality, after having been this very, like, abstract, almost figmented wish, you know, for all my life that was seemingly so far away. Like, when it's farther away from you, you want it more because you have no way to really know how ungraspable it might be. So it's almost like you pine for it more because it seems unattainable, if that makes sense. And as soon as it was within my reach, as soon as it was within my grasp, I was almost like, you know, I had this moment where I was like, wait a minute, I'm kind of nervous. Like, I'm actually kind of experiencing some nervousness. And it was odd because I knew in my mind and in my heart, no, like, this is what I want. This is what I've always wanted. And yet, now that it's here, I'm experiencing an odd feeling of nervousness accompanied by doubt. And that really kind of threw me for a second because I'm thinking, okay, well, am I experiencing doubt or am I just doubtful because I'm experiencing nervousness? So this is why I wanted to weigh in on this topic. And truthfully, I thought I was the only person that felt this way. So when I saw this user even ask this question, I was like, I felt so much more reaffirmed in my own feeling because I wasn't sure that anybody else had experienced this type of feeling of, you know, getting right up to it and then being nervous and then wondering if you're doubting your decision. So now I want to speak about it because there has to be someone else out there that feels the same way. I know there is. And I think there is something to be said about doubt versus nerves. And there is an importance in remembering that those two terms, those two states are different, and one does not entail the other. They don't coexist. They don't necessarily go together. Just because you get nervous doesn't mean that you have to doubt that you're making the correct decision. There is a difference. If you can objectively solidify that you are feeling doubtful because you don't know that this is the right thing for you, then go accordingly. Maybe hold off going on hormones. Maybe take the time to do kind of a soul search and consider other options. Consider if doing something other than going on hormones would be sufficient for you. Like myself, I considered, okay, let me explore the opportunity of maybe just getting top surgery, not having hormones. I did that. I looked at results. I watched videos. You know, I did my homework. I did my research. And at the end, I was able to get a concrete answer. No, this isn't for me. And I knew that. So you have to be able to pinpoint what it is that you're feeling. You know, really look inside, turn inward, and try to identify, am I just nervous because this is new, because this is a leap into the unknown, whether that leap is getting surgery or just starting hormones? Like, if it seems like it's falling more into that category, then that is completely rational. That's completely logical, and that is to be expected. Of course you're nervous. Of course you're a little unsure. You're a little apprehensive about jumping off of this big cliff into this new life, into this new world, because it's the fear of the unknown, and everyone has that. Doubt is different. Doubt is not feeling sound and certain in your decision, in your own wants and needs for yourself. If you're doubting yourself, that means you have more soul searching to do. And as I've said, the idea here is to compartmentalize. Really, really take the time to think about what the difference between nerves and doubt is. Because sometimes doubt can be accompanied by nerves, right? But nervousness is 100% to be expected. And if you know at the end of the day that this is the only way for you, if this is a decision that you've known for years, then what you're experiencing isn't really doubt. It's just nervousness, and that will go away. You should be worried if there aren't nervousness, if there aren't nerves associated with it. Because if it was easy, then everyone would do it. You know what I mean? No one would wait years and years and years to transition, and we know people do. We know people who are very old who finally get the chance to transition because they've been nervous their whole life, because maybe they haven't had the opportunity or the resources. But these are different things, and the point is, when you overcome your nerves, when you do something for yourself that you know is going to be the best thing for yourself. Sorry, my cat is in the background. But when you do something for yourself that you know is going to be the best thing for yourself, and you overcome those nerves, it's a feeling that I can't even articulate into words. It's this sense of overcoming this monumental weight that just gets lifted off of your shoulders, and you're one step closer to just being yourself. So that's another way to look at it, you know, the payoff. Think of the positive effect, the positive result that you might get, like the feeling that you're so happy that you actually did something that you wanted to do for your own benefit. And maybe it's been that way for years. So the most important takeaway here is to not conflate doubt and nerves. And if I can reaffirm you in any way about the fact that it's okay to feel nerves, and nothing's wrong with you if you're feeling nervous, you know, prior to making these huge decisions, it doesn't mean that you're gonna change your mind. It doesn't mean that this all of a sudden isn't the right thing for you. Remember that. Just because you're nervous doesn't mean you're doing the wrong thing. It just means you're about to take a leap into a new territory, and your body is responding to the fear of the unknown, and that's normal. So I would encourage anybody who's feeling this way, really take the time to try to take it apart first. Really take the time to separate nerves and doubt and analyze which one you have, because if you can objectively state that you have doubt, then maybe don't go about making these changes just yet. Take some more time, do some more research, look inward. But if you can objectively establish that it's just nerves, then you have to actively talk to yourself and help get yourself through that, so you can get over that next step, so you can really achieve what it is that you know you've been wanting to achieve for so long. Anyway, I'm gonna end there. I hope you guys enjoy this, and I'll see you next time. What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in. Welcome back to episode 4. Today I want to talk about bathrooms. A very fun topic, a very relatively controversial topic in the year 2019 for not just trans people, but cis people as well. Specifically, cis people having an issue with trans people using the same bathrooms that they do, even though technically we've used their same bathrooms our whole lives prior to transitioning. Anyway, so just for terminology, when I reference cisgender, C-I-S gender, that just refers to anybody that was born either male or female and who identifies with the same sex. Anyone who is born and identifies as the same sex that they were born with. So it's interesting because when I was considering a lot of the implications that would come with transitioning, and there are a lot, the bathrooms was an area that I really experienced a lot of anxiety about pre-T, but now that I'm on T, my bathroom anxiety is even worse. It's definitely heightened, and it's frustrating because it shouldn't be. Going to the bathroom is such a rudimentary, natural, common thing for everyone that, thanks to all of these people, these cisgendered individuals, I mean, let's be honest, it's a very specific group, these individuals kind of placing this taboo stamp on it, and now it's an issue for them, so now it has to become an issue for us. It's just, it's unnecessary, and it's disheartening, and it's frustrating. It's a lot of things. I have a lot of emotions about it. Because no one should feel nervous, legitimately nervous. No one should feel conflicted about going to the bathroom. And the conflict, the nervousness comes from, okay, well, if I go into the bathroom that's labeled the gender that my genitalia is, but outwardly I present differently than that. Maybe I have short hair. Maybe you've started T, so you're changing. Maybe you're not on T at all, but you just have short hair. Even people like that who don't fit this quintessentially heteronormative norm are going to experience issues in the bathroom. And even before I started T, and I just with my short hair would walk into the women's bathroom, I was very aware of women sort of side-eyeing me or looking at me and definitely questioning if I know that I'm in the wrong bathroom, because obviously I must be in the wrong bathroom if the sign on the door has long hair printed on it and my hair is short. So there was a lot of just sort of wandering eyes and a lot of feeling like the spotlight is on you when you're just trying to like do your business and get in and get out in like 30 seconds. I mean, no one's trying to hang out in the bathroom and like spend extended periods of time in public restrooms. Let's be real. We're going in there to do a deed and to get out. It's very simple. I mean, we complicate it, but that's literally what it is. So even pre-T, like I said, I was experiencing this, and I hated it because, I mean, I never, thankfully, had anyone ignorantly come up to me and be like, you're in the wrong bathroom, but I know people that have. I know professors of mine, women professors, you know, that have short hair, who have experienced this, and I was just thinking to myself, like, I wish somebody would come up to me and try me and tell me I'm in the wrong bathroom, like, I would have something to say. And retaliating like that is completely, that's logical, like that's rational, because you don't need to be policing me on what bathroom I'm in, because it doesn't even affect you. If you're in the stall, and I'm in the stall, and the only time we're ever interacting is to wash our hands at the end, that really doesn't affect you that much. That doesn't affect you on a scale where I'm infringing on your personal space, and I'm infringing on your rights or your safety at all, because we're not even interacting. We're barely looking at each other. So, you know, starting T, it made these things worse. And because I had already had this experience, and look, I was able to just deal with that, you know, having short hair, being preteen, using the public bathroom, I was able to just deal with that. If I absolutely had to go to the bathroom, I would go, and I would just suck it up, and if people would look at me, I'd literally just stare at them back, like, daring them to say something, and I would get in, and I would get out. But even then, I had this just perpetual feeling of uncomfortability, of nervousness, of apprehension about going to the bathroom. Like, anytime I'm in public and I get the urge to have to, like, pee, I'm like, my first thought is like, oh my gosh, like, let me just hold this for a little longer. Or like, is there a gender-neutral bathroom that I can find? You know, is there a safe space like that that I can go to? Or is there anything I can do to, like, avoid going to the bathroom in public right now? Because I just don't even want to deal with the people that are in the bathrooms that give you these looks and just judge you based on how you look, and they talk to you and they approach you as if you're in the wrong bathroom and you're doing something, you know, so morbidly horrendous. And the point is, one shouldn't feel that way. Cisgendered people, you don't ever experience that going to the bathroom. You could never know what it's like to get the urge to have a bodily function, and instead of just relieving that function, your first response is this terror, this nervousness, this, like, let me hold my bladder until I absolutely can't, because that would be better than just going to the bathroom really quick. So starting T, that was heightened, because I knew going into it, look, I already experienced this pre-T, so what the heck do I think the situation is going to be once I start T? And now that I'm, you know, almost 3 months, and I am starting to look a little different, I'm starting to pass a little more, I wouldn't say always, but I definitely, my voice is lowering, so that helps. And now that I'm having some facial hair, things like that, so now I'm really experiencing this sort of existential crisis, because do I go into the bathroom that is in accordance with my genitalia? My birth sex? It shouldn't even be according to genitalia. Let me flip that, because some ignorant, opinionated person is going to then use that as a means to say, you gotta go to the bathroom that correlates with your genitalia. And that's not the truth. You go to the bathroom of whichever one you feel comfortable with. And for me, I really didn't know what the choice, like, what the answer was for that. Okay, if I'm looking more masculine, if I'm starting to pass more, do I try it? Do I risk going into the men's bathroom and just using the stall, or should I just continue to go into the women's restroom until I am undoubtedly appearing, presenting more male? And maybe I have, you know, an STP device, a stand to pee device, and then I can use the men's room. So I've done both, and I've also done my research, and I've looked at videos, and I've questioned other trans men about how they navigate the bathrooms. And going off of my own experience first, when I have gone into the men's bathroom, there was maybe one or two times that I felt like I got looked at, and looked at in a way where they were kind of like trying to figure out if I'm maybe just a really, really young, feminine looking boy. I mean, I don't even know, maybe just a really, really young boy, you know, or if I'm in the, I just had looks, and it made me feel a certain type of way, because of course I'm thinking, immediately I'm conscious of my transness, and I'm thinking, okay, is that what they're seeing, you know, can they notice there's something different or off about me? And then I'm using the stall, and I mean, that's a thing too, just the whole utilizing a stall seems questionable, and unless you're going number two. So I use the stalls, because I don't have an STP device at the moment. I want to, of course, purchase one, because I think that that will help me navigate the bathrooms a little better as I continue to progress and change on T. But when I use the women's bathroom as well, it almost feels extra off. It feels extra like this isn't right. Because now, mentally, I know I'm taking testosterone. I know I'm more male, you know, and I want to be careful here with how I articulate this, but for me, knowing that I'm on testosterone automatically makes me feel way more male, way more myself than I was pre-teen, and of course. But that has implications when I use the bathroom, because I feel, okay, I can't rightly be a male and use the women's bathroom now, can I? And of course, the point is to not use the women's bathroom. I don't want to be in there. I want to use the men's bathroom and etc. But because I'm in this kind of early stage right now, this awkward stage where I don't really pass yet, of course, I don't even have a device to, you know, help myself in the men's bathroom at a urinal. So how do I navigate? Where do I go? Okay, well, the solution is I just avoid going. I just don't go. And that's not a very good solution at all whatsoever. And I have heard of other people doing similar things like that, where they literally just hold their bladder for as long as they can and they develop UTIs and all these other infections, because you're not supposed to hold your bladder. You're not supposed to not go to the bathroom when your body's telling you you have to go. So when I did a little bit of research, when I did a little bit of homework and looked up videos and things of other trans guys navigating the bathrooms, I think it was a YouTuber by the name of Chase Ross, who Upper Chase is his YouTube handle. But he had kind of shared a blunt, you know, truth. And what that was saying that if you don't pass 100%, and it was hard, he did disclaim, he's like, this might be hard to hear, you know. And he didn't mean it negatively, it just was meant to be matter-factual, it was meant to be from experience. And he had said that if you don't fully pass, if you don't, you know, if you're not established that you're passing, then you should be going into the bathroom, you know, that was the same that you used as your, you know, your birth gender. So if you're female to male, trans man, you know, if you don't pass right away, you should be going into the women's restroom. And I was equally, like, glad but sad to hear him say that answer, because that was kind of the conclusion that I had came to myself, was that, yes, until I pass, like, unfortunately, like, I'm just gonna have to use the women's restroom. And there are times I use the men's restroom still, but the conditions have to be right. I'll use it if I know there aren't a lot of people in there. I'll use it if I know there are stalls. Like, if it's a gym bathroom, it's going to be more likely to have way more stalls than urinals. Some men's restrooms only have, I mean, one stall. And then if someone's using that and you're just waiting around for the stall, it looks a little questionable, you know? And then especially if you don't take a, you know what. And so that was kind of the answer that I was assuming, but it was equally hard to hear, because you could just see the look on his face. Like, he knew what he was saying, like, sucks, and, you know, people don't want to hear that, and, like, of course, no one in this position wants to be reaffirmed that they should be in the women's restroom. But I think that, in some ways, that's really because of a safety issue. It's really for one's own good. It's in one's best interest. And I haven't experienced anything like that where my safety and my well-being was at risk because I was in the men's room or something like that. But Chase had, other people I know have experienced very real physical violent threats just because they were in the men's room. And that's just not worth it. That's certainly not right on the part of whomever is trying to be violent against you, but it's just not worth it in your own interest to even have to navigate some scenario like that. So it's like you just have to almost suck it up and use the women's restroom. And that's why I think that there should be such a push for unisex restrooms, because my god, they're just rooms with ceramic toilets that suck and dispose of our waste. That's it. You know, all restrooms are gender neutral until you slap a sign on it, and that's like the newest thing. And I love that, because that's the truth. That is the damn truth. Your bathroom at home is gender neutral. Your bathrooms in public are gender neutral. But as soon as someone wants to label it, everybody gets all irate when someone deviates from that label. And this just stems to society's need to place a label and to box people in specific positions, because that's the only way we know how to make sense of everything. And as soon as somebody deviates from that label, deviates, comes out of that box, everybody loses their mind, because it's not the norm. We don't know how to handle this. Why is this person defective? You know, why does this person want to be different? And people get offended. And it just really bothers me, because you really don't even know why you're offended. You're offended because you're relying on stereotypical responses to something like this. You're offended because it's something different. It's something that you could not conceive because you have not experienced it. But that doesn't mean that you have to put in danger everybody else who does experience this, the other percent that has to deal with this stuff. It doesn't mean you have to automatically make some place like the bathroom an unsafe space when all everyone is trying to do is just do their business and leave. It's not complicated, and yet we complicate these things, and it has real world ramifications for the people that are being subjugated like this. So the bathroom concept is an area I'm pretty passionate about, and it's because of how I feel when I'm going to the bathroom, and because of other people that I know who have experienced the things that I've talked about. And it's like, I don't want to feel like my first response when I have to pee is to be nervous and to worry and to like want to hold it, or to purposely like plan my excursions, you know, around going to the bathroom. Yeah, do you want to go out this weekend? Like, we'll go to the bars. Okay, yeah, that'll be fun. And then the first thought I get is, well, great, like, I'm probably going to have to go to the bathroom at some point. You know, how is that going to go? That shouldn't be my first thought. My first thought when I go out with my friends should just be, yeah, like, I can't wait to drink or have fun or dance. And those aren't my first thought anymore. And that's why it's a problem. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think. If you have experienced issues with going to the bathroom, if you've experienced people who've really had a problem or thought that you're in the wrong restroom, talk to me about it. Tell me about how you navigate the situation. Tell me about how you navigate going to the bathroom. How does that work for you psychologically, etc.? Let's talk. Hope you guys enjoyed this, and I'll see you next time.